anti-heroes and bad people getting what they deserve.
Sure, but Kirsty in the first one was a genuine heroine.
Yeah,
she's... Because she had nothing. She was the innocent that just happened to be Uncle Frank's niece that was going to get killed by him.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's got the boy, you know, again, British horror. She's got the boyfriend who doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
And like all these unspeakable, horrible things are supposed to be happening in front of them, and he's just standing there with a blank look on his face.
Sure.
You know.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. We're going to take a quick pause, right? And we will be right back here still talking about Hellraiser. Real Horror Show with Chris Earl, Derek Gary here with you until 7 p.m.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair? Or...
Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
It's WMFO in Medford, Real Horror Show, Chris Earl, Derek Gary. We're talking about Hellraiser, Hellbound, Hellraiser 2, Hellraiser 3, which was a hell on earth, I believe, and also the new Hellraiser, which is on Hulu, which I give a marginal thumbs up. It's worth seeing once. I was never scared. There's some great lines that the new Pinhead has. I really liked a few of the dialogue lines that she had. And it actually has a pretty good third act. But the only problem is, like I said, all the Cenobites surround this castle that is kind of like a magnet. So it kind of keeps them away. So they're just kind of standing there slowly while they're all staring at one another. And there's like no tension and there's no build up there. But there is one point with the Chatterer who all of a sudden is standing there just staring at them for the longest time. And then all of a sudden it goes into fast zombie mode for no apparent reason. And I laughed out loud. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Because you're going to have fast zombies.
It made no sense whatsoever. It made no sense whatsoever. It wasn't like they got through a lock or something. It's like you could have done that at any point and you waited till now.
As I've pointed out, one of the problems with filmmaking right now is that nobody sits down and writes a coherent story anymore.
Yeah.
They sit there and they're like, oh, this would be cool. Yeah. Oh, this would be cool. Oh, this would be cool.
Right.
So at the end of the day, they got 20 scenes that don't necessarily connect to each other. And they're like, there's a movie.
I think I said this last week with Winston and guest co-host. And my friend Steve has a theory that because it's all young writers now who don't know anything about writing, and most of the older writers are all retired, that's why we're getting all these just convoluted stories. Yeah. There's nothing happening.
Yeah.
They're just signed on, you know, for an episode or two. They don't care what happens to the rest of the series, and nothing is... There's no outline anymore.
No.
Remember when you had to create a story? I mean, we learned this in, like, junior high. It's like you create an outline on your story and what you want to do. First act, second act, third act, you know?
And if you were going to...
Who are your characters? What do you want to do? Make a plot, you know? Where are they going to go?
If you were going to do something franchise level, you had a Bible that explained, and that's what it was called. It was the Bible.
That's right.
And it explained who these characters are, what they can and cannot do, and what the rules of the world are.
Sure. Luke Skywalker is not a loser, number one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Critical in horror, because horror only works, you only dial up dramatic stakes, and stakes for your protagonist.
Stake.
If there are rules.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone can be anything at any time,
right,
then there's no danger.
Yeah,
you could just overcome whatever's in front of you, and there's no threat.
That's right.
What makes it scary is we have a woman in the desert with a zombie walking behind her.
Right,
and the zombie is going to keep going while she wears down.
Yes,
that's scary.
Yes,
what's scary is we have teenage girls drunk, running through the middle of the woods with a guy with a chainsaw or a machete in back of them who knows every inch of that ground.
Yeah, and they don't know where they are.
And they have no idea where they are.
That's scary.
That's scary.
Yeah, exactly.
When, I can just, you know, do this thing and then the danger is gone. It's not scary anymore.
That's why I love that quote from American Beauty. I played it in the opening there. There are rules in life.
Yeah.
You can't just do whatever you want. There were rules. You have to have rules. There's horror story rules. You have to play in those limits, and then it's good. And if you just don't care, then it's bad.
And Hellraiser 2, it's one of those movies that just sort of makes it up as it goes along. You know, it's like, there are some rules here, but mostly, you know, we're just setting up dramatic sequences.
Yeah.
And it just jumps from thing to thing to thing with no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah.
Suddenly there's threats here. Now that threat's gone. Oh, here comes the other threat. Let's run through the corridors again.
A great, iconic villain, though. I mean, Pinhead is an iconic villain.
But he's not
it's
in it
so
enough.
Creepy. Yeah, he's not. And that's the thing with, like, Boba Fett. You know, it's like he was great at first. As soon as we hear more about him, we don't care that he's the mayor of Tatooine. We don't care.
I would say the one exception to that, because as a rule, where horror franchises go wrong is they start explaining their characters.
Yeah.
Michael Myers was way, way scarier before they put all that druid crap in there.
Yeah, yeah, you just knew he was evil. He was evil incarnate.
Freddy Krueger was way scarier before they introduced the dream demons and all of that nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason, they never bothered to explain.
No.
Which is part of the reason that it's just the quality of those movies kept going downhill.
But he got too powerful.
The one exception to it is, in fact, Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Because at the start of the second movie, Clive Barker tells us who Pinhead is.
Yeah, you actually get to see him without the makeup and how he was a man beforehand.
And the third movie is all about that.
Yeah.
And it's all about establishing that there is still some humanity left in Pinhead. You see it in the second film, but that's what the third film is about. And that works.
Yeah.
Because you understand the idea that there is no real redemption for this personality.
Yeah.
But there is a way to end the evil.
Okay. Very good.
And I find that compelling in a way that, you know, nonstop killing just isn't compelling.
What would the world be like without evil? What do you think? Would it be boring?
It'd be bored as hell. if evil didn't exist, we'd create it.
That's right.
He really would.
Humans would create it.
You saw the Halloween.
I didn't see it.
Oh, you didn't see it?
Because I needed to see the last one, too, and I didn't have the extra 90 minutes. It's on the Peacock, too.
Yeah, I'm not getting the Peacock.
You get it for free with the cable. You don't have cable?
I don't have cable.
Oh, I got the Peacock and the cable.
But nobody has cable.
I got everything.
Who has cable?
I got it all.
Who has cable?
I got it all.
Cable?
I'm like that guy that just opens his window and throws his money out.
Yeah. Well, you know? I've got a wife to do that because she never saw a streaming service that she didn't want to sign up for.
But yeah, and the thing is I know it's there, so I don't watch it until I'm damn ready. But I did, you know, I watched Hellraiser and I watched Happy Birthday to Me. And, you know, I caught up on those. But I'm going to go see it. We got next week, so we'll do more Halloween stuff next week. And then that's it. And then it's Halloween.
And it's Halloween.
And then we got to figure out what to do all the way up until Christmas because we're going to keep this horror thing going.
Well, believe me, there's plenty of ground that we have yet to touch.
Horror is all year. It's not just Halloween, but it's nice to watch a bunch of horror in October.
I did want to touch base on
new release.
We'll get to the new 4K release. I did want to touch base on Candyman.
Oh, yes.
Because you saw Candyman.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
And you did not like it.
No.
I saw Candyman, and I liked it a lot.
Really?
Yes.
Tell me why.
The original Candyman was a socially aware film.
Sammy Davis Jr.?
No, not that one. The original Candyman was a socially aware film, sort of hiding in a horror movie.
Yeah, and it should have stayed hiding, in my opinion, not in your face.
But here's the thing. Yeah. A lot of it was in your face.
Yeah.
Because Candyman, the first one, at its roots, is about the failure of government to take care of a segment of the population.
That's what made it an interesting movie in 1992, not in 2022.
It's about housing projects and how housing projects let down, you know, the people that they were supposed to help.
Yeah.
The new one really picks up where that one left off. And it's a Jordan Peele joint.
Did you like the characters?
I liked the characters.
You did?
I did.
Wow.
It's, if you like Jordan Peele's horror films, if you liked Get Out, if you liked Us, yeah. I haven't seen Up yet. Or I haven't seen Nope yet.
I haven't seen Nope either.
I will see that.
I know you like those more than I did.
Us is a science fiction film and not a horror film.
Yeah.
I like what Jordan
Get
Peele...
Get Out was okay. I didn't think it was phenomenal like everybody else did.
I think a lot of people put a lot of things onto Get Out that, while they're there, weren't necessarily that novel. You know, it's like, oh my God, it's a racially conscious horror movie. And it's like, do you know how many racially conscious horror movies there are?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't... It's Jordan Peele bringing his sensibility to these things. I like what Jordan Peele does. I like a lot of what happens in Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is kind of a wish fulfillment horror movie for black people.
Mm-hmm.
And it does raise some of those questions about institutional racism and government letting people down and those things. But it doesn't do it in a way that felt to me...
Oh, I thought it was super forced.
It didn't feel forced to me.
No?
And it didn't feel like it was saying, you, white people, you're the problem.
Oh, yes, it did.
I didn't get that from it. I did not get that from it.
Yeah.
I think you...
That's why I'm like, I wish I had some more black friends. I got a couple.
I think you've got to be hypersensitive to it to get that out of it, because Jordan Peele takes a pretty even hand in the film.
I am pretty hypersensitive, though.
You know?
I'm a hypersensitive man.
Because the film
I love hard.
The film exists within the context of the middle class in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which did not exist when the first Candyman was made.
Yeah. And it still really doesn't exist now.
It does, though. There's like a nouveau riche middle class hanging out in Chicago, and that's who these characters are.
Mm.
You know, they're not...
They're pretty much rich and poor. Like, I mean, I've been there a few dozen times.
But he's like, the guy's an artist and his wife's a museum curator. And,
come on.
You know, they're well-to-do.
Yeah, but they're ridiculously well-to-do.
But that's Chicago.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
You've been to Chicago. You know what it's like out there.
Yeah, that's movie magic to me.
If you don't have money, you don't play. You know, if you don't have money, you live on the South Side. This is the South Side Chicago story.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It starts out in that
realm. In the gentrified neighborhood.
And I like the fact that it's a direct sequel to the original. I like the fact that there is a reason for it to take place when it does.
Yeah.
It is a direct sequel to the original. And there is continuity to the original that is important to understand this one.
Yeah.
My problem with it, my only real problem with it, is I think at times it got too obsessed with having a style and having a feel.
I thought that was one of its strengths. I thought it had a lot of style. I'm like, this is a good looking movie. And you could tell the money was spent.
The problem with it is...
But it's also the director trying to make more of a name for herself.
Those stylistic choices happen at the expense of the story.
Yeah.
The story is jumping around to place.
Was it a horror movie? I wasn't scared. Not at one point.
I wasn't scared.
Yeah.
No.
So it was a political movie.
It's got jump scares in it.
Yeah.
But it's got jump scares.
It's loud.
Keep in mind.
Yeah. It has some loud moments.
You and I are immune to jump scares.
Well, that's kind of true.
Because we've seen everything.
Yeah.
But for an audience,
scary woman.
For an audience that hasn't seen everything, it's got jump scares in it. That's about as scary as it gets. It's a somewhat political movie. I don't think it exists solely to be a political movie. I think it exists to raise some issues.
Yeah, but
I think it does marketing it well.
The way that it was marketed and also came out, you know, right after all this stuff, you know, during COVID and then all the stuff that happened, you know, with what's his name there?
Yeah.
And the police.
Yeah. It just sort of goes from like 0 to 100 with no space in between because they've filled that space with somebody aping the Philip Glass soundtrack from the original
and a lot of drone shots. Sammy Davis Jr. in there.
And a lot of drone shots of buildings. Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, I understand you're trying to call back to the original and you're trying to give it that same feeling.
Yeah.
It's not working.
Mm-hmm.
It would work better if you paid more attention to the story and had people explaining what's going on.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to take one scene where something happens to a character and extrapolate that out to his ongoing dread.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work. You know, it's like, give me some story in between. And I'm not criticizing the stylistic elements look great. They just get in the way of the narrative for me.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't recommend it. I thought it was lousy.
I think if you like the first Candyman, you absolutely should see this one. And if the Candyman movies in between left a bad taste in your mouth, you know, if they were Sour Patch Kids, you should see this, watch the first Candyman and watch this one.
Yeah, I'd say watch the first one, you know, but I don't think the first one was that scary. I mean, it was okay.
The first
I thought the villain was fantastic. I thought he did a great job
at
it, but I just don't think it was that scary. And but it was also a Clive Barker movie, you know, as we're talking about Hellraiser. Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's weird too. You know, it's like, what are the bees for? Why has he got a hook hand? You know, it's like, what is going on?
And all of that, all of that gets explained because it has to do with how Candyman got killed.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was interesting about it is Jordan Peele's gore scenes or Jordan Peele's kill scenes always tend to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because you expect them to be gory and then they're not.
Yeah.
And it's, you expect that there's going to be blood and guts flying all over the screen, and there's not.
Right.
Like, he throws just enough in there to get you hyped up, and then everything suddenly becomes off screen.
Right.
There's one scene in the film where a bunch of people die, and it's a great example of the way that Peele approaches that.
Are you
kind
talking
of
about the bathroom scene?
The bathroom scene.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Where it's like you're expecting that it's going to be this all out blood fest.
Yeah.
And what he does winds up being more effective than that.
Yeah.
There's a moment in Us that's the same thing. Like, Us is basically bloodless until this one scene. And that one scene isn't that over the top, but it's done in such a way that it stays with you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still not recommending it.
I'm telling you, man, the first Candyman was every bit as political as this one is.
You think so?
Every bit.
I think it was clever. It's definitely far more clever.
It's a very progressive film.
Yeah.
You know, it's about poverty, and it's about white people trying to solve black people's problems and giving them failed solutions.
Yeah, maybe.
And it's one of the things that I really liked about Candyman, about this version of Candyman, is when you get to the end of the film,
there's candy at the end.
And there's candy at the end. But they're talking about what Candyman is and what Candyman represents.
I did like that. And I also like the animatrix there.
Yeah.
Really cool animation.
And I think, you know, you and I could sit here and debate whether or not we subscribe to that point of view.
Yeah.
And whether or not that point of view is legitimate. My take on it is to say, if that's your reality and that's what you feel is going on in the United States of America, then that's legitimate.
Sure.
That's your truth.
Yeah. And that's the perception is reality, you know.
Exactly.
Take on it.
Yeah. But if that's the case, then let's start with that. Let's say that's what's going on. That's what it really is. That makes the ending of this film very powerful and very meaningful to a certain segment of the audience.
But and I also think it's a little dangerous.
I don't think so. I'm not going to sit here and say you shouldn't think the United States is racist. You shouldn't think these things about our country.
Oh, the United States is racist.
It is racist. Yeah. We know that.
Yeah.
I believe there are certain people out there that gin that up for their own financial and personal benefit.
I have to say it's global, too, though. I mean, for the most part, racism global.
But there's also, like, a lot of pain and a lot of hurt and a lot of looking for, you know, some... It's like I say, it is on one level a wish fulfillment movie.
Sure.
And I find the wish fulfillment in it to be very sincere. And I find it to be targeted in the right areas.
I think it's interesting, but I don't think it's very sharp. I don't think it's very well thought out.
I don't think it needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think
I also don't think it's a horror movie. Not really. I really don't think it's a horror movie.
It is, but it's a horror movie by design, and that may be the problem with it, you know, is that it sets out to be a horror movie when it might have been better as something else.
Big budget student film, you know? Yeah. I got that
it's
impression.
It's better than that.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's do Vincent Price. I got a good one this week, actually. We'll take a little break, and we'll do Vincent Price. I have, for the next few weeks, I have six tracks from Vincent Price's Wine is Elegance from 1977. And this is the title track, Wine is Elegance. And Vincent Price, noted chef and connoisseur and all-around great horror movie actor. We do a little clip of him every week. So here's Vincent Price, Real Horror Show. Wine is Elegance. We will be back in a moment, and we'll play this or that, and Derek will have his DVD and 4K and 5K and Blu-ray pick of the week.
We got a great one this week.
So here is some Vincent Price. We will be back in a moment. Stick around. Real Horror Show WMFO in Medford.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Vincent Price.
I think all of us like a touch of elegance in our lives now and then. I certainly do. I am, of course, talking about inviting a few friends for dinner and serving wines with every course. It's so easy and everyone enjoys it so much. You know, we Americans are basically a very friendly, informal people, and somehow we feel embarrassed about doing things in a formal, magnificent way. And we shouldn't. First of all, a formal dinner party for 6 or 8 people is fun, because graciousness is always pleasant and formality provides a refreshing break from everyday existence. It is much the same feeling as dressing up in brand new clothes. Secondly, the time and thought given to preparations for a formal dinner is a compliment to your guests. The foods, the wines, the service are all part of gracious entertaining. Let's pretend we are preparing a dinner, as I am, for some friends next week. It is entirely optional whether you wish to use a set of different wine glasses for the different wines or the all-purpose wine glass. The first course is soup. I shall use a consommé, although onion or asparagus soup is commendable too. With soup, serve your guests a glass of dry California sherry, approximately 2 ounces. The second course is a seafood dish, such as oysters on the half shell or cold lobster with mayonnaise. With this, a chilled California dry white, a Riesling, in 4-ounce pourings. The entree is next, a nice rack of lamb, a roast duck, or even prime rib with fresh asparagus, or French-cut beans with chestnuts or walnuts, and perhaps a potato souffle. With this, of course, a robust California red wine, such as a Burgundy, or a fruity Cabernet Sauvignon, or Gamay Beaujolais, would be most delightful, complementing the meat and offering a contrast to the other wines. The red wine should also be served in 4-ounce pourings. At this juncture, a simple lettuce, cucumber, and onion salad is most refreshing, with an oil and vinegar dressing. If you wish, you can break up Roquefort cheese and toss with the lettuce and dressing. Now, dessert should be equally simple. Fresh fruit, a mild cheese such as Monterey Jack, and of course, a very highly chilled California sweet sauterne. When dessert is completed, it is time to serve the demi-tasse coffee, and not before. With the coffee, the final touch of elegance is achieved by offering your guests a glass of fruity port, the smaller 2-ounce portion. There is no doubt we have just prepared for an elegant dinner, but you know that just one of those California wines, or champagne, can turn the most simple family meal into a feast, and it could be served with every course at your banquet. A white wine with a chicken dinner, red wine with spaghetti, it can go a long way in making your evening meal a banquet for family or friends. And don't let anyone fool you. California wines, even at their low cost compared to most foreign wines, are among the finest in the world. You just can't surpass them.
You look like an angel. Walk like an angel,
walk like an angel,
talk like an angel, but I got wise. You're the devil in disguise, oh yes you are, devil in disguise. You fool me with your kisses, you cheated and you schemed.
Probably not a horror movie song, but Devil in Disguise. It's Elvis. He died scary.
Yeah.
Who wants to die in the toilet?
You know. Yeah. Well, it happens to a lot of us. Yeah. This is one of the most common ways for men to die.
I think I'm a, you know, 2-for-1 shot on that.
Massive heart attack on the toilet.
Yeah. I already got some people betting on me.
Gets a lot of good ones.
Like, yeah.
Yeah,
he's probably going to go on the toilet.
Wouldn't rule it out.
We spend a lot of time on the toilet, you know.
I don't.
I heard it's like 11.2 years of our life on the toilet.
Really?
Yeah, it's a long time.
Wow.
Or in the bathroom.
I'm more, in the bathroom.
When I'm in the bathroom, I'm usually on the toilet. I'm not playing in the sink. I'm not going in the bathtub. I'm right on the toilet.
I'm pretty
getting things done.
I'm pretty efficient at that.
Yeah? You got to make sure you wash. Oh, it says 1.5 years. 1.5 years is how long you spend in your bathroom. Using the toilet accounts for the biggest chunk of time spent in the bathroom, an average of 1 hour and 42 minutes a week. You think you spend 1 hour and 42 minutes a week on the toilet?
No.
Like sitting?
No.
I don't think so either.
No.
Unless I got a good book.
Maybe I'm not doing it right.
Yeah.
Maybe I just
unless
need...
I'm watching Hellraiser on DVD.
Maybe I need to see a doctor. I'm not in there 2 hours a week. You know. That's.
I got the VHS over in the corner next to the shower.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know, Hellraiser, like I said, the remake, I'd say watch it, C. I'm going to give it a C. Marginal thumbs up, very marginal. Check it out.
Yeah.
You like Hellraiser stuff.
Yeah.
You like Clive Barker.
It's worth seeing just for the Cenobites to see what they're doing with them, because they're interesting characters.
Yeah. They do a very good job with them, I think. The Pinhead was great, and the Chatterer was great. And something happens to the Chatterer in it that's great. It was probably the best part of the movie, I thought. And the villain at the end gets his just desserts, but it also harkens back to what you had talked about with the interdimensional stuff. And he gets what he wants. So he gets defeated, but he gets to move on to Cenobite land.
Oh, nice.
At the end, which is kind of interesting. So they set it up for a sequel. You know, so the villain could be also part of the next one. But, yeah. But so the original Hellraiser 1 and 2, you gotta be, as a horror fan, you got to tell people to see it at least once.
You've got to see the original Hellraiser.
Yeah.
If you enjoy it and you want to see, like, a disaster unfold, go see 2.
Yeah.
But 2 is just such a hot mess.
I'd give them both. I'd give, like, a B-. And a C+.
Oh, I'd give the first Hellraiser a B.
Yeah.
For the production design and for the Cenobites.
Yeah.
For the story, some of the acting is good. The story is like basic.
There's some great lines in there, though. And when you're a teenager, man, I mean, there's some funny stuff in there. It's like, come and give your Uncle Frank a kiss. And he's like completely...
I know.
Frank is like skinless.
He's
basically all blood.
Yeah.
And he's like all blood and skin. And with each kill, he gets stronger and stronger.
Yeah, he starts getting his body back.
And so everywhere he sits down, it's basically... He gets on a white couch and it's just covered in blood.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there is that part of it, which is like, oh my God, you know, and that brings out a lot of the teenage, you know, funny stuff in there. You know, you see it now and you're just disgusted with it, but there is a lot of funny stuff and a lot of good lines.
But I think I think the challenge with Hellraiser today is the same challenge that you have with Star Wars today, which is younger people who haven't seen these movies don't have a frame of reference from a time when they didn't exist.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that when you sit down and you watch Hellraiser, you are seeing the first of its kind.
Right.
And that all those horror movies that you like now that have like gothic S&M elements to them, that comes from this movie.
Yeah.
And prior to this movie, you didn't see that.
Maybe next week we could talk about one of the everyday horrors of history dying.
Yeah.
Like nobody seems that interested in learning about history. It's just like, I can make a movie. Anybody can, you know?
Nobody cares.
And it's like nobody wants to hear about the Lumiere brothers or, you know, any of that stuff. They basically just like, I got an iPhone. Let's make a movie and, you know, put it on YouTube and hopefully TikTok now and make millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. It's like nobody, we're getting to a point where I worry that people just don't want to see movies anymore.
No,
you know, they want to watch a 2-minute clip on their phone.
Not even. I'd say 10 to 20 seconds.
Yeah, you can make a 20-second horror movie.
10 to 20 seconds of somebody getting harmed.
Yeah, monetize that. You can make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to see a good horror movie, this week, one of the greatest horror movies of all time finally comes out on 4K. This is The Return of the Living Dead.
Which is number 2, right?
Which is, it's not, well, this is where it gets interesting. Because Night of the Living Dead, we know. That's the George Romero, John Russo...
1968
horror movie that became a massive cult hit.
Right.
Shortly after that, John Russo and George Romero stopped working together. John Russo left with the rights to the title.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that has the phrase Living Dead in it
yes.
was Russo. Which is why George Romero's sequel is called Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Night of the Return of the Living Dead is John Russo's sequel, written with Russell Striner. You may remember him as the first person killed by a zombie in Night of the Living Dead.
Uh-huh.
The driving glove wearing boyfriend of our lead. They're coming to get you, Barbara. He co-wrote that. He co-wrote this. And they'd been trying to get this movie made for a while. And they were going to make it with Tobe Hooper. And Tobe Hooper said, no, I'm going to go make Life Force instead.
Ugh.
And so they got Dan O'Bannon. Dan O'Bannon, if you know the movies of the 80s and the 90s, is a pretty big name. He wrote a lot of screenplays for really, really beloved movies. So this was his... So he gets involved in this.
Yep.
He rewrites the script, and he directs it. And it's the first thing that he ever directed. It is a 1980s... punk rock zombie movie.
Yeah, 1985.
And it is one of the first fast zombie movies.
Yep.
There are, in fact, fast zombies in this. And the basic premise of it is one of the zombies that inspired Night of the Living Dead is in a giant steel vat.
Yes.
In this medical supply company's basement. The medical supply company happens to be across the street from a cemetery and next door to a mortuary, naturally. They break the seal on the vat. The chemical gets out. Yes. All these zombies come to life.
Right.
At the same time that a bunch of punk rock youngsters have shown up to party in the cemetery.
Right.
What ensues is roughly an hour and a half of pure punk rock mayhem.
Yeah.
This movie is insane.
Yeah.
And it's not just the punk soundtrack. It's not the ridiculous audio cues. The things that happen in the movie are insane. There is an extended sequence at the start of the movie where two people are trying to stop a reanimated corpse from the medical supply company that can't see because it's dead.
Right.
Because they knock its head off. But it's still running around all over the place, making a mess and trying to kill them.
Right, right.
The other thing about these zombies is you can't kill them by shooting them in the head. Like, any piece of these zombies that is still alive is going to come after you and try and get
still
you.
Still animated, right.
There is laugh line after laugh line in this movie. It is a pure horror comedy. It exists to be a horror comedy. Everybody who's involved in it is on board. And it's pretty much like a who's who of like Friday the 13th victims. Linnea Quigley is in this. She's naked for a good chunk of her role in this. If you've never seen it, and it's entirely possible because it never shows up on streaming and it sells out constantly whenever it's released on home media. If you've never seen it, buy this sight unseen. You will enjoy it.
It's good, yeah. This predates Evil Dead 2 by 2 years.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It falls in between the first Evil Dead and the remake.
Yeah, the Evil Dead 2, yeah.
But this definitely like gave the studios confidence to pursue this kind of movie.
Yeah, a little comedy and punk rock. It's got the Cramps on there on the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great soundtrack, too. It's a lot of punk stuff.
It's interesting. If you already happen to own the Blu-ray of this, Shout Factory just dropped this on 4K. The 4K is an improvement over the Blu-ray. They went back and rescanned it. It looks fantastic. I wouldn't call it the same sort of major upgrade that Demons was last year, because Demons was a huge upgrade over the Blu-ray. This is more of an incremental upgrade, but it looks really, really clean, and there's a nice depth to the picture and a nice clarity to the picture.
Is it Shout Factory?
Shout Factory.
Yeah.
So the new set is basically the old Blu-ray set with the new transfer and a 4K disc thrown in.
Nice.
But there's one other like critical thing for the hardcore Return of the Living Dead fans. They managed to get the rights to one of the songs back.
There's a real zombie inside.
Yeah. They actually restored the original voice of the Tar Man as well.
Okay.
So licensing for this thing when MGM put it out?
That's one of the things, is all the music. With the licensing, you have to get the rights to all the music, and it costs more than the movie sometimes.
Somebody wrote a contract that said, licensed for VHS. So when MGM went out to make the DVD, they had to relicense everything.
Wow.
The Damned have never allowed their song, Deadbeat Dance, to be relicensed in the United States.
Wow.
Apparently they want a ridiculous amount of money for it, and nobody's going to pay them for it.
Hmm.
So that song is still missing and has been missing from every version. The song that's back in this one on the 4K version and as an alternate audio track on the Blu-ray, which has the new scan, is Burn the Flames by Roky Erickson.
Okay.
If you know the film, you know that that audio cue is one of the best ones in the entire film. Like, the iconic one is the zombie coming out of the ground and Do You Want a Party?
Sure.
By 45 Graves starts to play.
Yes. Party time.
Burn the Flames is probably the second biggest audio cue in the film, because it's the one where
the guy
puts himself into the crematorium,
mm-hmm,
so that he won't become a zombie.
Okay.
And that's playing in the background while that scene goes on. This is one of those movies that was actually edited to the music.
Yeah.
So when you take the audio cues away, it loses something.
Sure.
So if you're a hardcore fan of the film and you miss that moment is back.
Nice.
So that gives you a reason, if you own the Blu-ray, to go out and upgrade to the 4K. Visually, I think there's a case to be made, but it's not going to be night and day.
This is funny, because this is one of the few movies that I should have in my collection that I don't. Because it was always very hard to get. It was always very hard to find. VHS copies, you get a copy of it, and it was always crap.
Beat to hell.
Because people had watched it so many times. But, yeah, this is one of the ones that I'll probably pick up and throw into my collection.
And
this guy that did it, too, he also did Total Recall as well. He did Dark Star, another big underground sci-fi hit,
yeah,
and heavy metal. He did heavy metal as well.
Dan O'Bannon is involved in tons of cool stuff.
Yep.
He's one of those names.
Wrote the screenplay for Alien.
Yeah. If you're into genre films, you know that name. And this was his shot at directing.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it is a great movie. It's been a long time since I've seen it. It's a really great movie.
I got to throw on a few minutes of it last night before I went to bed, because my disc showed up yesterday.
Yeah.
And as soon as it started rolling, it's one of those movies like Caddyshack, where once it starts going, you're talking along with the soundtrack.
Right.
And you're doing all the joke lines. You're like, oh, this is coming, that's coming.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there having a great time with it.
This is a midnight movie for you and your friends.
This is a midnight movie.
Yeah.
The best way to watch this movie is invite your friends over on Friday night, put a case of beer out, watch this movie, and just have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is a great horror movie. And it's fun.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's not a super serious horror movie. It's got some great gore moments in it, some great special effects in it.
I would say it's similar to like the early Peter Jackson horror movies, too. They're fun.
Yeah.
You know, they're super gory, but they're funny. They don't take themselves too seriously. You know you're watching a movie the whole movie. You know, there's nothing where it's like a dose of reality in there. There's no dread. You know what's going to happen.
But the thing that really sets this one apart is you like the characters.
Yeah.
Like, the characters in this are actually likable.
Well, that's what's huge for a movie for me. Yeah. You got to like them.
Because they're silly and quirky. And when the bad things start happening to them, like you're pulling for them to survive.
Sure.
And it just keeps, and the odds just keep getting stacked and stacked and stacked against them.
Yeah.
Until you get to an inevitable conclusion. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I saw it in the theater.
Did you really in 85?
I saw it in the theater in 85 opening night.
That
must have
been awesome, because you were a teenager then, right?
I may still have the More Brains pin that they gave me that night.
That's great.
Which is a great little collectible that the opening night audience has got.
Yep.
From the first time I saw it, I was like, this is one of those movies that's just going to be with me forever.
I remember Somerville Theater used to do a schlock around the clock. Me and my friends went there in high school a couple of times. And they would do a 12-hour horror, or they do 24-hour. And we did the 24-hour a couple of times. And, man, it was we would just bring the little cooler full of, like, you know, sodas and sandwiches and stuff, let you bring stuff in. And we had a blast because we would, like, this would be on there. And some other movies that you never even heard of before. But as a teenage kid, it was all brand new for us, you know. So these were amazing movies to see.
This is an awesome movie to watch with an audience.
Yeah.
It really is. So, you know, bring friends over. Have a good time because there's great comedy in this.
Yeah, I think so too.
And great comedy always plays better when you have other people in the room.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. We haven't done anything on this yet, but I want to mention video games. I started this game last week for the PlayStation 4. I know it's on 5 too. It's a Resident Evil one. And I think it's the sequel to Biohazard. And it's good. I've played about maybe only about an hour, hour and a half, but it's creepy as hell. And having that on surround sound and playing it, really, really cool. So I want to give a marginal thumbs up for that. Well, a thumbs up for that. I like it so far, and it's really good. I was talking to another one of my friends that he said he's already finished it. But it's pretty cool. I don't know anything about Resident Evil, but I guess it was a Resident Evil 8 or something like that.
Oh, I played a bunch of those games back in the day.
The Village is what I'm playing. That's what it is, The Village.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. And I also got The Quarry, too, and I've been doing that, and that's pretty good, too.
I've heard good things about The Village. I never actually... It's a remake. I never actually played the original, but I was working at THQ.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that it came out. Actually, no, I take that back. I did play a bit of it. There were other games out and I didn't get into it. I think one of the Grand Theft Autos came out around the same time.
Yeah.
I never really got into it the way that I did some of the earlier Resident Evil games.
Sure.
But there were some brilliant set pieces in it.
Yeah.
There's one where you're, you know, the classic, you're in the farmhouse in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
The zombies are coming at you from all sides.
Yeah.
And you've got to defend the farmhouse for a certain amount of time until they stop attacking you. And they're not actually zombies in this one. They're angry villagers.
Yeah.
Which adds a different dimension to it. But there's a whole rationale. It's sort of a prequel to what happens in the later Raccoon City set. Resident Evil movies.
You know what's funny is I haven't seen Resident Evil. I plan to watch it this week.
The first one is the only one worth seeing. And I'll give you the first 15 or so minutes of it.
Yeah.
The first 10 to 15 minutes are probably about as good as anything in zombie filmmaking. Yeah. After that, when it starts turning into a video game movie, it starts going downhill.
Yeah.
There's some great stuff in it. There's some great set pieces in it. But it would have been much more interesting just as a, you know, you see the moment the virus gets loose in the lab. And those scenes are excellent. So it's one of those I can watch the first 10 minutes of it, turn it off, and be happy.
I'm going to check it out, see what I think.
Return of the Living Dead, I will put second all time for me.
Nice.
Zombie movies.
Oh,
nothing beats Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead is the greatest zombie movie ever made.
I love the remake to Dawn of the Dead.
I like the remake too.
Yeah.
And I would probably put that remake somewhere, probably number 5 for me. And I'd probably put Romero's Land of the Dead at number 4.
Yeah. That's good too. We'll play a little diss of that, I think, this week. I'm going to give you two. Are you ready? You are surrounded. You're in a jungle. There's a swarm of red ants that have come to attack your camp, and there's no way out. Do you choose the ants, or do you choose you are at the circus, and all of a sudden everybody starts running because there's 10 crazy circus clowns with axes that start hacking up the crowd?
Cool.
Which scenario would you like this week?
Wow.
This or that?
I'm definitely down with the circus.
You're going to go for the circus clowns?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's 10 circus clowns with axes. They've already chopped up a number of people that have come in to just see the circus on a regular day, and they're invited to this horror show. So what happens? How do you survive the 10 circus clowns?
I actually don't care if I do or not. It's more interesting to die in that environment than to be eaten by ants.
Yeah.
You know, like given a choice between dying alone, eaten by ants, or watching a bunch of people get beheaded by clowns and then going out, I sign me up for the clowns.
All right. So, so survival doesn't matter in this scenario. Just no. As long as you're entertained with it. Hey, you can get an axe in the head and have a smile on your face.
How does one repel a clown? There has to be some
laughter,
sort of
sadness. Some can make them feel sad. Show them a picture of their mother or something.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
No, there's got to be some reliable...
You've got that survival instinct. How are you going to survive it?
This is a tricky one.
It's the circus. There's 10 circus clowns with axes.
They're
chopping up the crowd.
I might go looking for the lion tamer.
Okay.
Because he's got lions.
Sure.
And I'm pretty sure that the lions aren't gonna cotton to clowns with axes.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah,
and the lions are probably
much of a deterrent.
Better killing machines than a clown with an axe.
Yeah.
So
lions might take a few people out in the crowd, but they'll get a few of the clowns too.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Because as soon as the lions start attacking the clowns are gonna go after the lions.
Yeah.
And the lions are lions versus clowns. The lions are gonna win.
That would be a good horror movie. Lions versus clowns.
Lions versus clowns. I'm there for that. I'll sign up for that.
Yeah.
Lions versus clowns versus Ryan Darmody?
Yes. I meant to bring this up last week, but I was waiting until you got back this week. It was the Fat Bear of the Week?
Fat Bear Week.
Fat Bear Week. Who was the winner of Fat Bear Week? I saw they crowned a winner last week.
I know. I got sick.
Fat Bear Week.
I got sick on Columbus Day and didn't get to see the end of Fat Bear Week. So I was actually thinking about it today. And
Fat Bear Week, Bear 747, Bear Force One was the winner of Fat Bear Week.
That was the one that I voted for.
Bear Force One?
Yeah, that was the one that I voted for on the first day, I think.
I like that. 1,400-pound giant over 20 years old. He previously captured the title in 2020, so it's a recurrent win.
Yeah.
Oh no! You didn't win 2021. Bear Force One. I love that name.
That's some chonky bear right there.
Yeah,
that guy's eating all the fish.
Give me a this or that. You got one for me?
I don't actually, but you know what I do have is
what's that?
Friday Night Frights.
All right, do a Friday Night Fright.
So I've been talking about Lucio Fulci all month, and Lucio Fulci is not everybody's thing because his movies are. Often perverse.
I call him the original Dr. Fulci.
And usually graphically violent. So the one I'm going to give you this week is a film called Manhattan Baby.
Yep.
It was the last of his New York-based horror films. Between 1980 and 1982, he put out 7 films. Like, he made 7 full-length horror movies.
That's pretty impressive.
That's an insane...
short time.
That's an insane, absolutely insane production rate. Even for the quick and dirty stuff that the Italians tended to do.
The quick and dirty Italians.
I've got to bring water next week.
Yeah.
Or honey, or both. So this was the last one that he did. And it was also the last horror film that he did with... legendary screenwriter Dardano Sacchetti. Also Italian. He worked on some of Argento's stuff.
Yep.
Notably, they collaborated on the 3 Gates of Hell movies, City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, and House by the Cemetery.
Yeah.
So, the best way to describe this film is an exhausted filmmaker who has just had his budget cut in half, trying to figure out how to get the movie done.
Yeah.
It was originally intended to be a big special effects movie. Like, he wanted, like, all these wild, you know, Egyptian things happening all over the place.
Yeah.
The story is a pretty basic one. Family goes to Egypt. Dad's an Egyptologist. Little girl gets an amulet from a blind beggar woman who appears out of nowhere.
Sure.
Kids, do not take the amulet from the blind beggar woman.
Oh, you got to. Otherwise, there's no moving.
Do not take the amulet from the blind beggar woman.
You got to.
She gets back to New York, and then things start happening. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because this film makes no sense at all.
Uh-huh.
There is a sequence where people are disappearing, and horrible things are happening to them. And then in the next sequence, everybody's around and everything's fine, as if it never happened.
Yeah, I kind of dislike stuff like that.
And it's clearly...
And it's not like Pulp Fiction where there's a rhyme and reason to it being all out of order.
It's clearly like we shot what we needed to shoot, and then special effects go here, or this other scene goes here, and the other scene never got made.
Yeah.
So he just took what he had left and tried to make a narrative out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I will recommend it, not because it's a particularly good film. It's all of Fulci's stuff is on some level watchable. He does have a couple of moments where he builds some nice suspense. I think the opening sequence in the tomb is particularly good. But for those who stay away from Fulci because they think it's too bloody or it's too perverse, there is none of that in this film. The only real gore scene in the film comes at the very end. You will see it coming from a long way away, and it is so ridiculous that it's a little hard to take seriously.
Uh-huh.
Basically, one of the characters gets pecked to death by taxidermy birds.
Taxidermy birds?
Yeah.
See, I don't know this film. I've never seen this one.
And most people haven't because it was never released over here.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where when Lucio Fulci films blew up on DVD,
yeah,
they started looking around and seeing what else is out there. Somebody found this.
Huh.
And they were like, yeah, it actually played in like a couple of, you know, drive-ins in America. There's an English dub. Let's get it out there. So it's on Tubi, and it actually carries a TV-14 rating, which is accurate. There is very little blood in this film until that final sequence.
Yeah.
There is no nudity in this film. There isn't so much as a disparaging word. There also isn't any subtext. There isn't any real plot that you can follow. Characters just come and go and pop in and out.
So watch Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
And things happen because they need to happen.
Yeah.
But if you've always been curious about Fulci, but never brave enough.
I'm bi-curious about Fulci.
If you've always been curious about Fulci, but never brave enough to sit down and watch one of his films,
yeah,
this is a good way to understand and appreciate his style.
Sure.
And the way that he made his films.
Mm-hmm. So you recommend it?
I recommend it for the hardcore Fulci fan who wants to see everything.
Yeah.
And for somebody who has never seen a Fulci film and wants to understand what the fuss is all about without having eyeball violence foisted on them.
I didn't think you were going to say fuss there for a second.
Yeah. You know, if you don't want to see drill presses going through people's heads, people vomiting up their intestines,
yeah,
or people getting their eyes gouged out in new and exciting ways,
yeah,
this is the Fulci film that you can watch.
I've been we started a real horror show, Sweet 16. I wanted to do like a Survivor cage match. And I originally thought of getting all those little dolls like, you know, the Friday the 13th, Part 5, one versus Hellraiser versus, Michael Myers versus Zombie.
We should do the brackets.
Dracula.
We should break it down.
Yeah, so I did two of them so far this week, and I had a little bit of response. So I'm going to give the results and bring these ones into the next round. So I had Battle 1, who would win in our first cage match? And most people was Freddy Krueger versus Michael Myers. And 57% of the poll said Michael Myers would beat Freddy Krueger. And then there was one person who threw Jaws in there.
Yeah, there was a clown who threw Jaws in there. Yeah, and so he got voted in as his own possible answer. That would be Ryan Darmody.
Yeah, nobody voted for him.
Yeah.
So he would not survive versus Jaws versus Michael Myers.
Jaws is not beating
Freddy Krueger.
They made a movie about that, and it was a draw.
Yeah. It wasn't Michael Myers. It was... the other one, Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's right. That was Jason,
yeah,
it was
Jason.
It?
That was Jason. It was Jason.
Yeah.
So I didn't put Jason in there yet. So in the second one, I put Dracula versus 10 Fast Zombies and 67% return on Dracula. But we had 33% say 10 Fast Zombies.
So. How is Dracula going to beat zombies?
Oh, very easily. He can turn into a bat.
Yeah, but okay, so he can fly away.
Yeah, he can bite them all.
No, he can't.
He can just leave the room.
There's no,
he just disappear. That's what he does.
Dracula needs blood to survive.
He is the man of the night.
Dracula needs blood to survive. Zombies don't.
Yeah.
Which means sooner or later, there's no blood for Dracula, and the zombies are still coming after him.
I don't know. 67% said Dracula.
Those are people who don't know zombies.
Yeah, but I know Dracula. Dracula would just be like, see ya. He's aloof like me.
Dracula's gone.
He's aloof like
Dracula
me.
Dracula is a zombie, by the way.
I did put, he is a zombie, actually. Yeah, he'd just take control of the other ones. Because he's got that hypnosis thing, too, remember?
Fast zombies don't listen to anybody.
Nah,
they don't care.
Dracula would just, you know, hypnosis, And he'd have them just go walk in a field, like be extras on The Walking
Dead.
Doesn't
work on zombies.
Yeah. Cujo and Christine. Christine is winning by far at 100%. But we haven't closed that poll yet.
I think car versus dog is one of the older battles in life. And it hasn't been good for the dogs since we invented the automobile.
Yeah, I think I created that poll just because I dislike Cujo and Christine so much. Cujo's not bad, but Christine's a dumb movie.
Christine's a terrible...
A stupid, dumb horror movie. But it does have that old guy in there that's in all those movies that's great. He gets kind of more of a lead role. I forget what his name is. The skinny guy with the beard.
It's all the worse because it's a John Carpenter movie.
Yeah.
And it's like it was the movie that kind of derailed John Carpenter's career because everybody was like, John Carpenter's going to do a Stephen King movie. It's going to be the best thing ever. And
right.
It came out and it sucked.
Yeah. Cujo was pretty bad too, though.
Yeah, Cujo's pretty bad.
Yeah. And Cujo gets stung by a bee.
Cujo is one of those... Yes, he does. Cujo's one of those movies that...
Should come full circle on those bees.
Shouldn't have been adapted because Stephen King's books are all about the anticipation of pain and the anticipation of death. It's about the psychological fear that his characters feel, which he writes out in these great big long, you know, sections.
Sure.
Of how am I going to deal with Cujo? Is the dog there? Do I hear the dog? And it's that character's internal monologue that's scary.
Yeah.
You can't put that on film.
Yeah.
On film, you've got an actor and a dog and a car, and it's like there's only so many ways that the dog can jump on the car before we get sick of it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You got D. Wallace just screaming in the car.
Yeah.
That's pretty much most of the movie. And the dog slobbering everywhere.
Yeah.
And the kid's terrified. It is terrifying for kids. I mean, nothing worse than a giant dog that's bigger than you. That's going to eat you other than the shock.
Yeah, but it's...
I should have put Cujo versus Jaws.
Yeah, well, yeah. Jaws wins.
That would have made, 100%. But Christine's winning 100%.
Sharks can't get rabies.
That's true. But rabies can get the sharks, can't they?
No. I don't think anything
can get rabies, can it?
No, I don't think sharks get rabies.
No. People can get rabies. Yeah. Hey, here's an everyday horror. I got a raccoon this week in my backyard.
No, no,
big
no,
raccoon.
No, no, no.
Yeah, big raccoon.
No.
I'm not sure what to do with it.
I got, call animal control. I got chased on the roof.
You think
of my,
I should?
I got chased on the roof of my car by a raccoon one time.
Wow.
They are, if they take an interest in you, run.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah?
This
one was just kind of lackadaisical.
Yeah.
I had some berries out. It was eating my berries.
Yeah, don't feed the raccoon.
Yeah.
Do not feed the raccoon because then you'll never get rid of it. You don't want them around.
Yeah.
They're a haven for rabies.
I know. And also the urine and feces is no good either.
But they're a haven for rabies. And if they're around, it's just a matter of day. Because they will come at you. And the one that came at me was rabid.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it literally chased me onto the roof of my car.
No kidding.
I'm standing on the roof of my car. And I'm like, if this thing comes up here, I got nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it gave up.
What'd you do?
It gave up and walked away. And then I ran inside.
Tossed you the bird?
Yeah.
Yeah. Raccoons. Yeah, I don't know, man. Maybe next week I'll have another horror story with a raccoon, but this could be the beginning. It could be like a part two next week.
Do not want those raccoons around.
Yeah. Well, it's a real horror show for this week. I'm going to wrap it up. But why don't you give me a quick this or that? Maybe I can do it in under 2 minutes here.
I can,
Give me something.
I'm no good on the spot.
No?
I'm no good on the spot.
Tell me raccoon versus a bear. I'd go for the bear. I'd hire Anthony Hopkins, and he'd teach me how to kill it.
Bear's probably taking out the raccoon.
I'd invite Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins. I'd throw Alec Baldwin into the trap so the bear can go after him.
Nice.
And then me and Anthony Hopkins would kill it and eat it.
That works.
Make a bear steak. But, next week, let's do something for Halloween. Should we dress up? I mean, for the show. I'm being facetious.
I know, but it's like, here's the thing. Like,
it's exhausting just getting here at this stage.
It is. It's like when you hit a certain age, it's like, do I have to? You know, it's sort of like...
You don't have to do anything.
No. But I'm just like, there was a time when it was like, oh, it's Halloween. Let's dress up. Let's have fun. Now
sure.
It's like, can I just get the candy?
Yeah.
Can I just get the candy and like, I got to walk a kid around the neighborhood and do all of those things on Halloween.
Yeah, you're going to have some fun. You got the kid. I'm going to be showing some Halloween movies again, but we'll figure something out for next week. We'll talk about Halloween a little more. We'll talk about some more horror movies.
We should talk about, one thing we should talk about, and I should mention, this is the weekend when It's the Great Pumpkin. Charlie Brown will be airing on PBS.
Apple, right? Oh, PBS. Yeah. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah.
How'd they buy that? They don't have any money.
The greed heads at Apple agreed to one showing once per year of each of those specials on PBS. So check your PBS listings. It'll probably be on Saturday or Sunday.
Very good.
Your one chance to get it without having Apple TV.
All right. I'm glad you're feeling better, Derek, and we'll see you next week. Real Horror Show, Chris Earl, Derek Gary, thanks for listening. WMFO in Medford. We'll be back next week, 5 to 7 p.m. Happy early Halloween, everybody. Good night, Derek. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you,
man.
Someday a friend may offer you a chance to visit the other side of a dream. Your ticket is a little packet of white powder called heroin. But every packet of heroin is different. You don't know what's getting into you. Some doses are so strong they kill. Heroin is so vicious that the criminals who make the big money in heroin don't use it. They know a lot of